It's Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. We're streaming live on YouTube too at the Team 980. Is Russell sure he doesn't want to do more radio? He's just hanging around.
He's rolling up his sleeves. I think he does.
You got takes? You didn't get them all off between 1 and 4? What's going on over there? AMAC just walked away. He's like, I'm out of here. Get me away from this whatever train wreck Hoffman's about to start. I love just poke a needle. Poke the bear. I actually used to not yell at Chris Russell. I used to give Chris Russell advice back when I cared more about social media. Like, Chris, it's not really poking the bear. You're just taking a stick to a hornet's nest and you wonder why you keep getting stung. I still feel like you whack away a lot. Every so often I go back on Twitter and I'm like, oh, Chris is hitting a hornet's nest again. I thought I told him about that. Anyway, your beekeeper suit looks great. I'm kidding. He's wearing a lovely sweater.
I love it too.
It's got like a nice, how would you describe that, Anthony? It's a quarter zip meets kind of like a sweater looking type of deal, material.
I'm not sure if that sheep that you have on?
I don't know. It's chic. I don't know if it's sheep.
Maybe.
But it's chic. And then, of course, it's got the ultimate Chris Russell accessory. The lanyard.
Yeah.
He's got the key. Doesn't matter. I've worked with, how many different buildings have we worked together in? Three? I think.
Three.
He's got the key card to whatever building he's got to get into at all times, right here. And you can laugh, but I sometimes forget my keys. I sometimes get locked out. Then again, my key card was exactly where I thought it was today. And the downstairs, I was like, did I get fired? The little gates downstairs, it let me in at first. Had to go to another gate. That's never good. It's kind of the ongoing joke. It's like, hey, they'll let you know because your key card won't work. And I was like, could have told me before I got on the train.
Yeah, that would have sucked.
Yeah. But we're here. Chris Russell doesn't want to do any more radio. And so we're going to do a show between now and 7 o'clock. But if you want to keep talking to Anthony, I guess I can work over here. No, you're good with Ant? Okay. Bye, Chris. It's lovely seeing you. Does he hate me right now?
No.
What did I interrupt? He's just walking out in the bullpen, scratching his head, like, what just happened to me?
We were talking about how many Bryans there are here, because you have, and they were telling me they had who we call Black Brian on their show.
Why do you call him Black Brian?
Huh?
Just kidding. I said, why do you call him Black Brian?
I mean, because there's a white Brian that works.
I'm up to no good today, everybody. We're just everybody buckle in. Welcome to the show.
There's a white Brian that works on 106.7. We have a black Brian that's on Team 980. And then you also have Brian Mitchell, who we call B-Mitch. So we were trying to differentiate the three.
That is tough.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a dude's named Jalen in pro sports right now.
Yes,
there's too many. There's so many that the Oklahoma City Thunder have two Jalen Williams on their team.
Insane.
They call the one that wears number 8 J-Dub.
Yeah.
To then not get him confused. J-Dub, the other one's just, I don't know, is the other one Jalen? Is he J-Will?
I think he's just Jalen.
Just Jalen?
I'm surprised neither one of them goes by J. Like, I think that's, you know, short. J.
Well, you know, back in the day, there was Jay Williams.
Yep.
The former Duke guard, who went by Jason, but there was the NBA center named Jason Williams.
Oh, yeah.
The Nets center, who ultimately, I think, got convicted of involuntary manslaughter. But he, like, shot a guy. I think it was an accident, hence the involuntary. Very tragic story. This isn't where I thought we'd open the show today. And then Jason Williams was like, I'm not getting confused with the other guy.
He's called me Jay Will.
Yeah, I'm going to go Jay, and he became Jay Williams. And now that's what he is on television. Other name mishaps. My guy Jeremy Green, the draft analyst. There is another Jeremy Green who is Denny Green, the former Minnesota Viking and Arizona Cardinals head coach. His son. Unfortunately, Jeremy Green got in a lot of trouble for some really bad stuff. Like, if you want to Google it, you can. I mean, it's just a Google search. It's not going to hurt you, but you'll be like, whoa, Craig wasn't kidding. And so, unfortunately, like, my friend Jeremy Green, who the guy we had on Take Command, not the same guy, but if you search Jeremy Green ESPN, you might wind up on the wrong Wikipedia page, in which case, because he also did, like, draft stuff. And, yeah, my friend Jeremy was like, yeah, I've thought about changing the spelling of my name, thought about changing it, but I just assume that people figure it out because I look like Luke Combs' long-lost cousin, and the other Jeremy Green does not.
Yeah. I don't know.
Not great. How did we get here? Dude's name, Jalen?
Brewster.
Oh, and then Bryant's. The Bryant's that you were Bryant. Talking about. What were you talking about? What was the... Was it just that there's a lot of people named Bryant?
Oh, I was asking Rooster how many bad takes he got off today. And A-Mac said he got off a decent amount. And he even let Black Brian come onto the show and give out his take about Dak Prescott being a top 10 quarterback in today's NFL.
That's not a hot take.
Well, I mean, that's what they were talking about.
If they think that's a hot take, that says everything that I need to know about their ability to
rate. Yeah, I told them. I said Dak Prescott's a top 10 quarterback.
Yeah, like that's not even the production debatable within the system and every, like, yes, like Jared Goff had a better year than Dak Prescott. Dak Prescott's a better quarterback than Jared Goff.
Yeah.
You are tied to your circumstances on some level. Actually, Mina Kimes did her annual quarterback draft, which is very interesting. And it was very, very good, very interesting episode. You'll see where everybody came out. And Jaden did go fifth, by the way, behind the top four. I think we talked about this the other day a little bit. But yeah, I think Dak was on the back end of the top 10, like projecting out the next 3 years. Yeah. So, you know, Dak, it's funny because I'll say this, and then people who, like, either you know ball and you're like, yeah, or you don't know ball and you're going to be like, that's the craziest thing I've ever heard. Her guest, and I've heard this from many other people, said he's the closest thing we have to Peyton Manning stylistically. Like, Dak is in total control of at the line of scrimmage. He knows everything. Like, pre-snap, I don't know there's anybody better, him and Burrow. Mahomes is a freak. But those three are probably the best three pre-snap guys in the league. The problem is post-snap recently, Dak has been a little more up and down. But yeah, Dak Prescott, top 10 quarterback, is like the antithesis of a hot take. It's actually a secret do you know ball take. So did Chris and AMAC think that he's not a top 10 quarterback?
AMAC does. I think it was Chris that was on the other side of the fence.
Where's Russell? Okay. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about the Pacers-Knicks game. Unless I can convince Russell to come in here and I'm going to harass him about who his top 10 quarterbacks are. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. I can't promise the rest of the show will be better than this, but we're going to try our best. All right. For everyone that was hoping for Chris Russell chaos, I'm so sorry to disappoint. I think we finally got to the bottom of his take, and it wasn't as crazy as I was hoping. So we're going to keep things moving. I do have good news on the guest front, though, Anthony. Tim Bontemps, ESPN, is going to join us at 5 o'clock.
Yes,
he
sir.
He is covering the Knicks-Pacers series, which is where our attention goes now. And, Anthony, my experience watching that game last night, I put last night in air quotes, was quite funny because I woke up this morning and I'd gone to bed entering the fourth quarter. I was just like, I'll watch the game in the morning. This is why I bought League Pass, because my sleep is important to me and I'm lame. So I know I'm going to wake up to something crazy. And I try sometimes when I'm watching stuff back to like avoid the score, the way the NBA app works. Like I woke up, I opened Instagram, I saw the Tyrese Halliburton choke thing, and I didn't have the full context of it yet. So I was pretty sure the Pacers won. And then I open the NBA app on my Apple TV, and I see the final score. So I know ultimately the final score is going to be 138-135 Pacers in overtime. And then I watch the fourth quarter in totality. As you're watching, you watch it live, right?
Yeah.
I'm trying to just, I wonder who had the weirder experience watching it. You and everyone else who watched it live, or me watching it back, knowing the Pacers were going to force overtime and win, and just not really understanding how the math was going to math. Because they're down 16 with under 3 to go. They're down 9 with 52 seconds to go. They're down. Tyrese Halliburton, they're down 2. Tyrese Halliburton's dribbling the wrong way as time is expiring. And then he puts up a shot, and the ball's in the air. And I'm like, well, I guess that's going to go in, and I guess it must have been a 2 because they go to overtime. But I'm like, are we sure? Did they print the right score? I cannot begin to describe to you how much of a mind you know what it was watching that game, knowing the collapse was coming, and just seeing the time tick away, knowing that what I'm about to witness is going to be one of the craziest things in NBA history.
Yeah, I couldn't believe what was going on. And I sort of kind of manifested. I was on the phone with two of my friends. We were all watching the game. And, you know, Neesmith is hitting 3 after 3 after 3. And I'm just like, the Pacers are really making this interesting. I really hope that, you know, they keep making threes and, you know, eventually force overtime. And if he comes up and misses a free throw, then they go down and hit a 3. And I'm just, I'm speaking all this into existence. And Craig, the fact that it happened, I just couldn't believe it. Like, literally, again, as you just pointed out, down 14, down 9, down 5 with 30 seconds left to go. And it's just like, how are they really going to pull this off? And somehow, some way, the Pacers complete their third improbable comeback of this postseason.
Like, it's three. I think they have 3 of the 4 biggest deficits overcome in the history of the NBA playoffs.
Yeah.
In this single 2025 postseason, it puts improbable into a different stratosphere. I mean, it makes the Mavs winning the draft lottery feel probable.
No, that
would hurt. That hurt to say out loud. I'm so sorry.
It does. It was funny, though.
Yeah. It is literally a lower percentage than the 1.8% chance the Mavs had. To have think of how many thousands of playoff games have been played. And 3 of the 4 biggest comebacks in the history of the league in the fourth quarter with under a minute to go belong to the Pacers this postseason. And it gets weirder than that. Because on top of the fact that, like, the shot that Halliburton hits to tie it hits off the rim,
bounces straight up.
Just Kawhi shot all over again, kind of, you know, turned on its side, or turned off of its side almost, if you will. But when the Pacers felt the most dead was when Brunson went out with his 5th foul. Like, that was their chance. You know, it's close at the end. It was a 3-point game at the end of 3. And Brunson, fairly early in the fourth quarter, or maybe it was closer to midway through the fourth quarter, picks up his 5th foul. And you're going, oh God, here we go. Like, this game on. Let's go. Deuce McBride comes in, and the Knicks just start cranking. They go on, I think it was a 16-2 run. They're up 14 all of a sudden. They get it up to 16, and we're down to 2.5 minutes to go. And now Brunson comes in rested to close out. And it wasn't like the Knicks got bad looks. They missed a bunch of shots late off of good looks. But the thing that really, like, the number one thing that kind of struck me, stood out to me about the Pacers is, unlike most teams that when they either need a bucket to hold a lead or need a bucket to try to crack into a lead, like, most teams get into this frantic mode and abandon their offense. And they're just high pick and roll or isolation basketball. My least favorite version, what I like to call ISO doo-doo ball. And there's no ISO doo-doo ball with the Indiana Pacers. They play fast, so they're always ready to score. And they just run their stuff. And it's mostly initiated by Halliburton. And whether it's him getting someone else, I mean, some of that is Neesmith, like, just coming off basic down screens and basic curl actions. And he's able to get off threes. Some of it's that. Some of it is, you know, other guys handling the ball, bringing it up the court, getting it to Halliburton, getting him in a side pick and roll, then getting him downhill, a kick out, a swing, or that. But like, they just keep playing basketball. And the Knicks, everything is the Towns Brunson pick and roll. And I actually don't mind that strategically either, because that is a money play for them. That is how they also play offense. I prefer the brand, the style, the aesthetically speaking, of what the Pacers do. I love ball movement. I think that's the purest and most effective, when it's done right, form of the game. But I just, hey, let's simplify it. Towns is a monster pick and pop guy, pick and roll guy. He also can make decisions if he needs to swing a ball. Even like, there's a play last night, Anthony. Remember when he got a little banged up, and then that ball went out to half court and Brunson got trapped, and he swings it to Towns, and the ball is like outside of Towns' frame by 3 feet. Towns catches the ball with one hand, in one motion, flings it to Josh Hart, I believe it was, at the top of the key, who then makes one more pass, and then they, I think, miss a shot. But like, that play from Towns is crazy. That is an unusual play. And so going to that is fine, but they just missed. And there's some other strategic things where I do think we can put some fault on the Knicks. But I genuinely love that the Pacers just kept playing. And that relentless pressure that they had was, I think, what ultimately pulls them through, not only late in that game, but obviously in overtime as well.
Yeah, it's sort of kind of, I think, is reminiscent of what the Knicks did to the Celtics, where the Celtics were up 20 in the fourth and the Knicks just walked them down possession after possession. Now, I won't say the Knicks were turning the ball over yesterday and, you know, they were sort of kind of missing shots. But still, the fact that, you know, you just continue to play the game, and that's what makes the playoffs so intriguing. Like, no lead is ever safe, to be honest, because, again, it's four quarters. And people, you know, every minute is valuable for those teams. So just seeing them, you know, be able to pull off another comeback sort of kind of makes them like comeback warriors. Like this I think I saw Brian Windhorst say it early. He said, once is a fluke, twice is a coincidence, three times is a trend. Hey, look, don't have it happen to fourth town, because now it's like a standard. Like, yeah. Good gracious.
Now trending. What's trending on the Team 980? The Pacers, good at coming back. There were some things that the Knicks did where I can say, ooh, that's a Knicks yikes. But ultimately, you got to give credit to the Pacers, too. But it's the age-old sports talk question. Was this a choke? Or was this, you got to give credit to the Pacers, and you're talking about a Pacers comeback versus a Knicks collapse? 301-230-0980. 301-230-0980. Comeback or collapse? Where are you putting the credit and the blame? We're talking to you about Game 1 of the Eastern Conference Finals next on The Hoffman Show. It's The Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app, streaming live on YouTube too at the Team 980. We'll get into whether Terry McLaurin missing practice is a big deal coming up in a little bit. According to Fox NFL insider Jordan Schultz, he missed the mandatory practice yesterday. He's been at everything else. The open sessions start next week. Wednesday, I'll be out there in Ashburn. Looking forward to that. Getting to see the guys get some work in. A little 7-on-7 probably. Get offensive linemen doing an hour of individual work. So we'll get our first look at I'll get my first look at the rookies, all that kind of stuff. We'll talk about the McLaurin story a little bit later in the show. We're talking now, though, about the Eastern Conference Finals and the Knicks' absolute collapse in Game 1. Or was it just a tremendous comeback by the Pacers and there wasn't so much that the Knicks could do? 301-230-0980 is the phone number. 301-230-0980. And Anthony, while we await calls, what do you think? What are you team collapse? Are you team credit? Or are you going to give the boring but probably correct answer?
It's a little bit of both.
I'm going team credit for the Indiana Pacers.
Really?
I'm giving them the credit because, again, They just didn't stop fighting. Again, Aaron Nesmith, he had 3 points entering the fourth quarter yesterday, Craig. He had 17 of his 20 points down the stretch of the game. And talk about just hitting consecutive three after three after three. Like, he sort of kind of kept them in the game. And then Well, not sort of kind of. He did keep them in the game. Like, and they were smart, though. They kept going to the hot hand. And for some reason, the Knicks and their big men just did not understand the assignment. This, if he gets the ball, he's shooting the ball. So I think they just kept losing track of Nesmith down the stretch. And then Halliburton, like, I think we also just got to tip our hat to him because, again, the shot that he hits, and you pointed it out, he was running backwards with, like, 1 second on the clock, and then he turned around and basically hit the shot that he did against the Cavs when they came back, you know, against them in their previous series. He sort of kind of hit the shot from the same spot. So I think you just got to tip your hat to those guys because they just kept fighting in. That's sort of kind of just been a common theme for them this entire series. I mean, this entire postseason.
It's all, to me, the final, like, 2.5, 3 minutes, a lot of it is credit Pacers. Because there's not super critical mistakes the Knicks make outside of missing shots. And the defense wasn't heinous, but it wasn't good enough either. You know, Josh Hart gets off balance a couple times in chasing Nesmith. The bigs don't close on Nesmith. But also, how many teams have the confidence to go to Aaron Nesmith, right? Aaron Nesmith is not a household name. And how often do we see teams force feed the star late? And sometimes it's like, why are you force? That's not even what that guy does. You know, you just have teams that abandon all common sense and try to get a shot for their superstar because it feels like the star's ego is more important than the actual result. And here you've got one of the best three-point shooters in the league. He's developed into that too, by the way. Oh my goodness. His development from a low 30s three-point guy in Boston to signing in Indiana and now becoming a 40-plus three-point shooter and one of the better two-way players in the entire game. The fact that they were willing to trust him late is just miraculous. But I also think that there is stuff done early that are earlier in the game, specifically Tom Thibodeau using his challenge early in the game on a silly foul that was never going to get overturned. And Rick Carlisle late having the ability to challenge calls, and he got two correct. I think it was one with a couple minutes to go. One with like 29 seconds to go. I have the play-by-play up. Right in front of me, Craig, just look at your computer screen. Yeah, 29.9 seconds to go. And then they have another call in overtime that they're able to challenge and get overturned because, and that one was with 20 seconds to go, where they're able to get the ball off of Brunson, retain possession. Obi Toppin gets that dunk, which should have been an and one, by the way. Ridiculous no call. And then ultimately, the Pacers able to hold on. And by the way, the most gangster end to a game that's not a game winner ever, Tyrese Halliburton just giving the ball to Karl Anthony Towns because of the 0.3 rule. That was funny.
Yeah.
That was better than the choke sign, in my opinion.
It was quick, too, though. He just took the ball.
Because you know why he does it, right?
Yeah.
Because it's under 0.3, it's got to be a tip. You can't catch and shoot it. So even if Towns catches the ball, flings it full court, as soon as he catches it, the game is over. So there you go. Gangster baller move from Tyrese Halliburton. But I think that the way the Pacers played, their confidence in multiple people to make plays, their collective togetherness combined with bad coaching decisions by the Knicks. And the funny thing is some of the Knicks' bigger mistakes didn't even cost them. Like Brunson gets caught on the sideline and is like falling out of bounds, tries to throw it off of two Pacers players, misses, and then it just goes right to OG Anunoby, who then misses a free throw. I'm not going to call a missed free throw as a choke job, but like if they turn it over in that situation, then like that's more choke material. Some of the things that they did that were the dumbest, that were the most choky, didn't even wind up hurting them because the ball bounced their way.
Yeah, I mean, they definitely were fortunate. I will say the instant replay, man, that is
going to... We got to speed it up.
Yeah.
We got to get faster. It's in all sports. It's so bad in soccer, the VAR stuff. It's so bad in the NBA. Caitlin Clark was talking about it in the WNBA over the weekend. It's brutal. And luckily for me, because the way I was watching, I was able to fast forward.
Oh, yeah, you didn't even have to sit through.
But still, I'm just like, I'm hitting like the 10-second forward button five times, and I'm like, we're still going? Another minute gone? Okay. How long was this still? It's ridiculous. 301-230-0980. 301-230-0980. Choke job, are we giving credit to Indiana? Stephanie is giving us a call. Stephanie, thanks for calling. You're on the Hoffman Show.
Hello.
Hey, Stephanie.
Hi. I was just saying, I believe it's the Pacers. The Pacers did it last night as opposed to the Knicks choking. I think the Pacers just outplayed them in the end of it.
Why do you say that versus the Knicks?
Just thinking about, I mean, looking at it, they just kept letting, I don't know his name. He kept hitting three after three. I think he hit five of them in a row.
Yeah, you know, Aaron Nesmith. Yeah.
When were you going to start guarding him? When were you going to call a timeout and say, don't let him hit a three? He hit five in a row.
Yeah, I would say if you're Tom Thibodeau and you're one of the greatest defensive coaches of all time, you might want to say tighten up there. Stephanie, thanks for the call. And it's those subtle adjustments, Ant, that like you have to just be able to say, all right, somebody else. And like, this is the thing with like a guy like Carlisle. He puts Shepherd in the game late. That dude had barely played all postseason. Nevertheless, in the game, you got dude making his debut guarding Jalen Brunson with 5 minutes to go in the fourth quarter. What? Like, the stones it takes for that. That's I think you just have to give credit to the Pacers. You have to give credit to Carlisle. You have to give credit to their culture. You talk about whether culture matters in sports and people like to boo-hoo it and whatever. Like your culture of just like, hey, when your number's called upon, doesn't matter if it's the playoffs, doesn't matter if this, there's no moment. Like we're all prepared. And I think the Pacers showed to be a team that is prepared. I do not trust the Knicks. And by the way, on the other side, I don't really trust the Timberwolves either. And if I think about teams that I trust in the NBA to execute beyond their talent, the Thunder are extremely talented. I think the Thunder are a team that you just trust to execute. They are almost too young to know any better. Like there's a youthful ignorance. For the Pacers, there's just almost an arrogance to them that works in their favor. And it's why they can go into a place like Madison Square Garden, play their game, and come, you know, just absolutely steal a victory in game one.
Yeah, and I think also, like, at what point, because again, Tyrese Haliburton was named the most overrated player in the NBA. But
he was, but it was also, it was like nine dudes. You know, Zach Harper talked about that when he was on with us because, you know, he wasn't a part of the poll, but like his colleagues at The Athletic did it. You know, you do the math on it. It's like nine dudes and of 450 said he was overrated, but that because their sample size was like 50 players or whatever it was. He's the most overrated.
Yeah, but still, like, I don't think we view him. We see how Jalen Brunson's getting treated. Like, granted, this guy has been clutch for the New York Knicks all season long. He won the NBA Clutch Player Award. And people, you know, putting him in that conversation, you know, one of the best guards in the NBA kind of thing. I don't think Tyrese Haliburton gets any of that kind of respect. So,
I mean, it depends on from who, though. Because on one hand, Stephen A. Smith is saying this morning, because Stephen A. Smith likes attention. And he's like, oh, just because you come through in clutch moments doesn't make you a superstar.
Oh, yeah, he did say that.
I'm like, this dude's been all NBA for multiple years in a row. And by the way, he keeps coming through in big moments, and that is what makes you a superstar. Haliburton in the playoffs has been fantastic. It's why the Pacers got farther than everyone thought last year, including winning on the road at New York in a game seven. And even, this is like a different category, but remember the Pacers made the finals of the NBA Cup? And everyone's like, what are they doing here?
Mm-hmm.
Like, this team never blinks. And I think you have to give them credit for that. But also, like, Haliburton was an Olympian. So, if you're in the basketball world, clearly there's people. I mean, Grant Hill, the director of USA Basketball, he clearly thinks that Tyrese Haliburton's really freaking good. Put him on the Olympic team. He didn't play a whole lot because he's backing up Steph Curry and LeBron James and Kevin Durant and, you know, dudes that are in their last Olympics and playing at the absolute peak of their powers, ball. which is crazy. The throwback machine, whatever's in the, you know, hey, let's get some French croissants over to America and see what we can do for the NBA. See if LeBron can play another 10 years. But Allie's on the team. And that's saying something. So, in some ways, if you're someone who's telling me that Tyrese Haliburton is overrated, then I think that we don't have to talk about basketball anymore. Because you've told me all I need to know about your opinion, which is that I shouldn't listen to it. So that's kind of where I'm at on the whole Tyrese Haliburton overrated thing. And I think the city of New York, unfortunately, is like, probably at the point.
Has your stance on the series changed at all? Is it still Knicks in seven?
I wish I had had the guts to say the Pacers. That's what I wish. That's how my feelings have changed.
If the Pacers win.
But I'm also trying to not overreact to one game.
It's only game one.
Right, it's only game one. The Knicks were up big. The Knicks can absolutely go into Indiana and win a game.
Yeah.
Thing is, I think the Pacers could win again at MSG.
Uh-oh.
So, like, home court almost doesn't matter in this series. And that was actually the last thing I'll say about this real quick is, like, a lot of times when you get to this stage of the playoffs and you have a team that hasn't been there, they're facing a team that has. And so you get some upstart Memphis Grizzlies team against the Golden State Warriors, and the Warriors are just like, we know how to win the Western Conference Finals. You don't. Done. And because not only has neither of these teams been to an NBA Finals, the Pacers were at this round last year, but because they haven't been to an NBA Finals, and because they played each other so much, it feels like some of the nerves of the Eastern Conference Finals, like that you get in a conference finals, weren't there last night. Like, both teams just came out and played ball. And I am curious when the pressure ratchets up, because eventually that reality is going to hit. As familiar as they are, eventually it's going to be like, oh God, we are two games away from the NBA Finals, from winning two games, or we are two games from our season ending short of the NBA Finals. And when that pressure cranks, how do these teams react? That's the real test, and we're not going to know until at least game three of this series on that front. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. Tim Bontemps is going to join us to talk more about this series coming up at 5 o'clock. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app on a rainy day in D.C. I was trying to decide, Anthony, was I going to bike to work today or was I going to take the Metro to work? I opened my door and it was raining and the decision was made for me.
You want to know what's crazy? When I was coming into work, it was raining. I was going over a bridge, actually. It started raining. I get off the bridge. It stops raining. I take GW Parkway. No rain. Get to D.C., no rain. So, I think I might have just missed the rain.
Drove around it?
Say that again?
You, like, drove around it?
I think.
So, here's the actual full story of me and my decision-making today. So, it's about 2:20-ish.
Uh-oh.
And I open the door to see if it's raining to decide whether or not I'm going to bike. And I'm like, it's raining. And I walk out the door, I grab a jacket, whatever, and I'm like, all right, I'm just going to take the Metro because I don't want to get caught in the rain. That would suck. And so I get like halfway down the street, or like by the time I go back, put on a jacket, open the door again, it stopped raining. And I'm like, this feels like a tease.
Yeah.
And so I leave and I'm like committed to taking the train. I get like halfway to the Metro stop and I'm like, do I want to go back and get my bike? Cause I like really wanted to bike. I wanted to just pedal out with the legs. And I was like, no, just go get on the train, go to work. You have things to do. Like we don't have enough of the show planned yet. And so get down into the Metro station. The cars are pulling up and I get a call from Richmond, at which point I remember I've told AWOD that I can go on his show at 2:30.
Ooh.
And so I'm like, well, I can't do the hit from the train. That's one bad form because I'm going to be breaking up every 30 seconds. on the train, and two, that's so rude to everyone else in the car. I hate when people are on the phone in the metro. And it's one thing if you like need to take a call and you're like making an attempt to be quiet, you're not talking. I'm trying to do a radio hit. Like, I have to be enthusiastic with what I'm saying. And so I'm like telling the producer, like, hey man, give me 30 seconds. I'm gonna get out of this train station. And I was like, I'm gonna be honest, I forgot about this. Like, give me 30 seconds to get outside. So I'm like, all right, I'm going to go stand outside the metro stop and yab about the Commanders, what they want. And so first, as I'm like leaving the train station, like a guy like starts to walk towards me and like, get, and I was like, you can go ahead. And then he starts like kind of mumbling at me. And I was like, I'm going to get away from you. Like, speed up the escalator, make sure he's not following me. Okay, we're good. We're clear on that. Then I get outside and it's freaking raining again. Because part of me, I live close enough to my metro stop that I was going to walk home, get my bike, and be like, all right, I'm going to just get my bike. And now I'm gonna ride down, because it's about the same to bike versus metro. But now it's raining. Like, it's raining harder than it was before. And so I have to go stand, like, underneath an awning. I'm on a street corner talking on the radio. At one point, like, police car goes by with the sirens on. And I'm literally telling Adam, like, sorry, I'm on a street corner in D.C. And D.C. is happening around me. So apologies. And do the radio hit. I'm like, all right, it stopped raining again, but I'm done playing this game. Get back on the train. And then I walked into work 25 minutes after I wanted to.
Sound like quite the afternoon.
Yeah. It was an adventure. An adventure I didn't want.
But you made it.
But I made it. And it stopped raining, and the Nationals, I think, are going to play baseball tonight.
Yes, they are.
We'll see how that goes. It's gone all right. They won last time they played. Tuesday night.
Yeah, they beat the Braves 5-3.
Yeah, love to see it. Love to see it. Nats, 6:15 is the pregame tonight. Nats on deck over on 106.7 The Fan. 6:45 is your first pitch over there as well. Our show going on until 7 o'clock. We got Never Read the Comments coming up at 5:30. We have talk about Terry McLaurin in the 6 o'clock hour. And coming up next at 5, Tim Bontemps, ESPN basketball reporter. We've been having him on forever, all the way back when he was the Washington Post NBA reporter. But Bontemps is going to join us. He was at the game at the Eastern Conference Finals last night at Madison Square Garden. We'll talk to Bontemps next here on the Team 980.